Welcome to
Wrinkled
Not Dead.
I'm Jennifer.
And I'm Mike.
We may be over 50, but we're here to prove we're still relevant.
And we have lots of real-world advice on confronting the challenges, but having fun getting older.
We're wrinkled.
Not dead.
Let's do this.
Back in the saddle again. Welcome to episode number 77 of Wrinkled Not Dead. I'm Mike Bell.
And I'm Jen Bell.
And the reason for that ridiculous song is because we were remiss and we've not published for a little bit.
Well, only five days. We're a little bit late.
It bugs me, though.
That's okay. You're human.
Yes, we are. Wrinkled Not Dead, episode number 77. Indeed, wrinklednotdead.com is where all of our episodes are found, and on iTunes, and anywhere where podcasts are to be found. They're getting more and more popular, too, aren't they?
They really are, but you really need, if you please share this on Facebook or wherever you see our bit.ly link.
Yeah, right.
It really helps us to grow and tell your friends and family.
Yeah, it's the only way we're
going to keep this going. It sounds hokey, but it's the way podcasts grow.
So our managers are advertisecast.com. Go to advertisecast.com if you're interested in sponsoring the show. For really reasonable rates, all you have to do is advertisecast.com, wrinkled, not dead, and there we are, and the rate sheet and all that good stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah, so check us out.
We've got something new this week, don't we?
We do. We've got a new segment called What We've Learned So Far.
Okay, we're breaking it in. So what we've learned so far or what we've learned?
No, what we've learned so far in particular since we've started this podcast.
Oh, excellent. Okay. Okay, I buy it.
Because it gets you thinking. It gets you sort of really putting your mind out there, and we're more alert.
Yeah, oh God.
And we're learning quicker. So
yes, we are.
What we've learned about doing podcasts, if anybody's interested in doing podcasts, is that just like when we were in the theater, Mike, we would do a show, and halfway through the length of the show, it would be probably, let's say the show ran for 3 weeks or 4 weeks. So 2 weeks in, the producer or the director would come out and watch the show and usually say, we need to tighten everything up.
What I used to hear all the time is leave out the improvements.
Exactly. You get so involved in your own performance, and your performance grows and gets bigger and bigger and becomes a story about Jen or the story about Mike rather than the story about Jen and Mike.
Uh-huh.
And so they always say, tighten up your cues, tighten them up.
Could drive a truck through those cues.
Exactly. And so we went back to listen to some of our last episodes of Wrinkled Not Dead, and we decided we need to tighten it up, make it sharp. If people aren't interested in something, think about it. Is everybody interested in what they...
What does it got to do with you?
Yeah.
Right? It's not about me.
It's not about ourselves. It's what we're giving out to our audience.
Got you.
So that if you're thinking and still doing a podcast, go back and listen and think, is it moving along? Let's get this snapping along. Because remember, attention spans last a very short period of time.
Yeah.
So if you can drive a truck through your cues, that truck is sailing through and not listening to your podcast.
And if any of the former stage managers out there who worked with us over the years and ratted us out to the director for lovingly doing our performances, this one's on you, dudes.
Yeah.
Or dudettes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
All right. Major topic, because we're tightening it up. Major topic this week is eyes on the prize. You came up with this. It's beautiful. I love it. What does that mean?
It means keeping focused. And it means this. This is a quote.
All right.
We go through the worst to get to the best.
Oh.
And it's, you know, no matter what life throws at you, you've got a goal to get to. You just keep going it. You just keep doing it. You don't look back. That's not where you're going. You look forward. Look where you're going.
Regardless of the circumstances, and difficult as it may be, plow forward, get it done, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're
talking about.
Yeah,
just keep that goal in mind. And it's really tough to do, to keep the eyes on the prize. But you said that was eyes on the prize is something to do with sports, correct?
Well, I first encountered eyes on the prize as a basketball expression, and I don't know why. But it was with the Phoenix Suns.
Okay.
And I think they adopted the saying during the course of one season.
Sure.
And it sort of stuck in my mind anyway. But it was very good. It's a way to go. So that quote again was, we go through the worst to get to the best. And we have both the worst and the best in a rose and thorn. And I have one.
Okay. What is your rose?
My rose is Chloe, our 16-and-a-half-year-old poodle, tiny, tiny. What does she weigh? 3 pounds, if that now?
Yeah, she's like a teacup.
Oh, my gosh. She's just a little bag of bones. She's so old. She's deaf. She's mostly blind. She crawled over on the bed and just came over, which is, you know, she's a bit aloof. She's a poodle. Mm-hmm. She came over and just snuggled in with me in the morning, one morning. And I just lay there like a corpse. Because I didn't want to move. I didn't want to do anything. And I thought, everything is right with the world. It was wonderful. Chloe just loved me up. And so it made my whole day. I mean, I felt calm. I felt wonderful. I felt inspired. And I guess pets can do that for you no matter what age. So thank you, Chloe, for doing that. And here's the, I'm not going to do any thorn this week. I don't care about that. The other part of it was the hummingbird rescue. Okay. Here it is. Short and sweet, though, right?
Mm-hmm.
How long have we been in our house? Almost 20 years.
Yes.
Okay. Never had a hummingbird fly into the house, have we?
No, we've had birds,
but
not
hummingbirds. We've had birds, but not a hummingbird. Mm-hmm. Okay. Hummingbird flies into the house on the upper second story of the house. Birds flying around. Dogs are going nuts. Bird can't figure out what's going on. Flies straight up into the skylight, thinking that's the way out. Mm-hmm. Well, of course it isn't. There's a glass there. So the bird is going nuts, flailing around up there, flailing around. I thought, oh no, this is the end. What am I going to do? How do I get this thing? Obviously, it's not clever enough to learn that, gee, there's something between me and the sky, and it's way up there in our house. So I dug out the ladder, and I dug out the little cobweb cleaner. It's got like a brush on it. So I'm standing on the very top rung of the ladder, the 6-foot ladder, extended all the way up into the skylight and trying to get this bird down from the light. So finally it got so tired, I think, that I was able to sweep it down a little bit. So it thought, thank goodness, the bird flies down, goes onto the balcony, and just sits on the ledge, sitting there. And I thought, uh-oh, this is it. But I thought, wait a minute, now it's resting. So I went outside, and I touched the hummingbird, something I've never done in my life, and stroked its back, and the little thing was looking at me with the little beady eyes that they have, and there's a few feathers that were missing, that's for sure. And I thought, oh, I just, please don't die. And flew away.
Oh.
I felt, but for the next couple of days, and I bet this has happened to every person out there, one way or another, where somebody hit a cat on the road, or this happened and you saw an animal die, or something like that. The images of all this stuff stick with you for a long time. So I keep thinking about the bird even now, hoping everything is okay.
Yeah, that you don't find the bird in the bushes or something.
Yeah, but
dead.
It flew off into the trees. And so, you know, but those hummingbirds live for quite a while. And they've been around our home for quite a while because our neighbor has a feeder. And so we see them every day. I mean, they'll come and dive bomb you if you go out the front door because this is their territory.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope the little guy's all right.
Well, let's keep our fingers crossed.
Okay, Jen's Health Minute.
Yes, I've got, I had recently, I was having some pain in my upper right side.
Yeah.
And I went and had a blood test and found that my liver and kidney enzymes were kind of high, off kilter, which is very unusual for me because I don't drink much. I don't smoke.
No, you don't.
I'm very healthy.
Yeah, you eat well.
And once we kind of went back and forth at the doctors, they asked me what I ate. And I eat a lot of these health bars. You know, there's GNC and there's so many of them.
Oh, there's millions of them now.
And because they're low in carb and high in protein.
Right.
And some of the protein is whey protein. Some of the protein is soy protein. And you kind of think you're eating healthy. And I eat at least one a day because I'm on the run. And what the doctor said to me was that many times these health bars can actually be difficult for your kidney and liver, and be very cautious with them.
What about it is makes
they're
them
hard? They're hard to break down. The way they're manufactured. With the whey, I know whey protein and soy protein is very good,
yeah.
But the way they're, with the particular kind of fibers that they use particular fiber. If it's not a good type of fiber, I didn't know there was a good or bad type of fiber, but she said just in the long run, just be very careful with the bars that you eat. Eat them sparingly, and she said the best thing for your liver and your kidneys in the morning is to eat oatmeal.
Yeah.
Because it works as little scrubbers, and it's there's all kinds of good things in it.
Your heart,
but we're told not to eat so many carbs. And she said, forget that. Just cut out carbs. Cut out a lot of carbs. You don't need to eat empty foods. Once again, we go back to Tammy Lee's.
With Sonia Marie, the nutritionist.
The nutritionist said.
Who's going to be back on Tammy Lee's show again.
That's right.
And which we produce.
Exactly. And she said, eat normal, regular food. And these bars are full of stuff that half the time you don't know what they are. So just be careful. And if you can put it in your diet, have some oatmeal in the morning with a little bit of a banana.
Yeah.
And she said, you're good to go.
Yeah, we eat about a half a banana each in the morning, don't we?
Yeah.
Hey, Ian Bell, if you're listening out there, my son Ian, he's into nutrition products and supplements and all that. Maybe he's got something to chime in about. He always listens to the show, too. So Tammy Lee Webb's
show. We've got to have him on our show to talk about
Skype him in.
To nutrition and that. Now,
that's a great idea.
And let me also say go back to this Health Minute. I'm 61, so it may just be because of my age. This may not be for somebody who's young. They may be fine to do that. I don't know. Whenever I talk about my Health Minute, I'm talking about my Health Minute. And so if you have the same kind of thing going on, then go see your doctor.
Yeah, I was waiting for the caveat.
Well,
because you always do it. You're just so professional that way. Anyway, the Tammy Lee Webb reference is to It's Steel About the Buns, which is a show we produce. And she's had this nutritionist, this very well-respected and famous nutritionist, Sonia Marie, on. And she's going to come back with some other stuff. You learned a lot from her last time.
I sure did.
Looking forward to that. All right, here's a fun fact for you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wait till you hear this one. This is a good one. Fun fact, U.S. publisher Ward's says that there are 1.2 billion motor vehicles in use in the world. Why is that a fun fact? This represents the number of cars, light, medium, and heavy-duty trucks, buses, but does not include off-road vehicles or heavy construction equipment.
Huh.
So it's a lot more than that. So they figure it's going to be about 2 billion by 2035.
Wow.
Here's the kicker. In 1885, there were no cars. 1885, Carl Benz built the first one.
So it was just one car in 1885?
Between 1885 and 1886.
Holy cow.
So they're not quite sure of a specific date when the first car was born.
So it was Carl Benz, Mercedes-Benz?
Mercedes-Benz.
Okay. So that was Carl's Benz. Was Mercedes' first name?
Chuck.
Skip
Mercedes.
Also, you know what? Going back to the hummingbird.
Yeah.
How do you know if a hummingbird is male or female?
They have a little dinky tiny.
No. You know what? We'll have to figure that out, and that'll be another fun fact.
Oh.
Because they're so tiny. You can't tell by their color of their feathers.
I really don't know. And how do you know if one's pregnant? Oh, no. When we were buying a fountain once,
right,
we saw a hummingbird nest that the folks at the place who sold all the statuary and all that
the
stuff,
fountains,
the fountains and all that they had carefully protected this nest from anybody who was going in there to shop. They cleared the whole area around. They had ropes up. They had everything so that the little eggs could hatch. And it was so tiny. I'd never seen one before. It was beautiful.
It almost looked like a little tiny wasp nest or moth nest.
No, like a moth.
Moth, yeah. That's what I meant to say, yeah.
Huh, I know. Oh, that's cool. We'll find out.
And we'll let you know.
Yeah, or if you know out there,
let us know.
Michael@michaelbell.com is my own email address. You can get me there, too. Michael@michaelbell.com. Okay, eyes on the prize.
Yeah, we've got some cool stories that we did a lot of research on.
Well, one isn't researched very much, but it was just, the first one I've got is, okay, I'm going to cut to the chase. If you don't like baseball and all that kind of stuff, doesn't matter. What I'm going to talk about here, it was game three of the World Series, okay? You get to the World Series, you get to the Stanley Cup. Even if you're not a sports fan, it's usually worth watching, right? Because these guys are the best there is. So it's fun to watch every now and again, and it was really a great distraction this year with the whole thing about the World Series. So it's very, as everyone knows, the outcome is Houston Astros won the series. But it was a hard-fought series. Went all to Game 7, and sadly, the last game was a bit of a disappointment to anybody in Los Angeles. It was 5-1, I think, or something like that. But here in Game 3, I tuned it in late. You told me about it. You were doing something else. Said, hey, the World Series is on. So I turned it on. It was halfway through the game. And a guy named Brad Peacock had come in for the Houston Astros as a long relief player. What that means is that the poor slob who started the game didn't get it done. Had to leave the game because things were not looking good. And so long relief is like, this is tough. So what generally happens is a guy named Brad Peacock would come out, go into relief, pitch a couple of innings, maybe, And then they'd have a succession of other pitchers. One guy was a specialist at this. One guy's a specialist at that. And that was the thing that Los Angeles did. They had players out there. They had pitchers out there by the gazillions. And that's what they were. They thought, okay, the guy throws two pitches. We want him in. We want him out. Next guy, next guy, next. The coach, the trainer, the manager of the Houston Astros left Brad Peacock in there.
The whole time?
The whole time.
Wow. Didn't his shoulders get sore?
Well, I mean, everybody in the stands is like writhing in agony because, you know, the guy, this is tough. This is tough stuff. You know, I mean, throwing a baseball, you're right. They count the pitches and all that kind of stuff, and it's very dramatic. But this guy's kind of a bit of a schlumpy looking fellow, to be honest with you. But he just stood there in absolute, abject concentration on what he was doing and pitched them out one after another after another. And the coach, the manager, left him in all the way through to the end of the game, and he won it. And he was a tremendous hero, regardless of any of the other players who did such very spectacular things in that game. This guy was the rock of Gibraltar, and I think he was the inspiration for that team to continue on in the spirit in which they did all the way through and win the series.
So he had eyes on the prize.
He had eyes on the prize.
Wow.
And it was amazing. He had all these quirky little weird things he would do, and his arm would fly around over there, and you'd think, how can he stand the pressure? Just amazing pressure. Eyes on the prize, Brad Peacock from the Houston Astros. That's my first story.
You know what I think is wonderful about this, too? Is these people who keep their eyes on the prize can tune out all the negative noise.
Yeah, and there's lots of it.
Oh,
now, they were at home, but they're, you know.
But still, the negative noise that goes on inside your head and outside your head by others.
Yeah.
How you tune that out and just keep going is the ticket to everything.
Right, right. Spectacular concentration.
So I've got a great story. It's from the Oprah show. Mm-hmm. And it goes something like this. I'm going to read it because, I mean, who can beat Oprah?
Yeah, true.
It's about a singing sensation named Charisse. Charisse overcame a very bad childhood in the Philippines to fulfill her dream of becoming a singer. When she was 3 years old, Charisse says she remembers seeing her father flying into a fit of rage and watched him choke and attack her mother. Mm. Very terrible, terrible. Charisse and her mother escaped with their lives, but they struggled to keep themselves financially afloat because they were alone. And in an effort to help support her family, Charisse entered singing contests, which is how she caught her big break. This is what happened. She posted these singing contests on YouTube and had a jaw-dropping performance that one of Oprah's producers saw. 13 million people had logged in to watch this 16-year-old sing songs. And after Oprah's producer saw this girl sing, from artists like Celine Dion and Beyoncé, the rest was history. She became well-known and is now singing and making a living at it.
I got one, too. Same thing from Oprah. This was a tremendous source of this. I don't know where. I mean, she's kind of a phenomenon of nature, that lady, all by herself. There is an eyes on the prize
person,
man,
right? She's amazing.
Oprah. Okay. When Cody was born, doctors told his parents that he had an incurable disease, wouldn't live past his first day. He survived, but he had a difficult journey ahead. At 15 months, both Cody's legs were amputated. By the time he was 18 months old, he was fitted for his first prosthetic legs. Cody shocked everyone when it took him just a couple of days to start walking on those prosthetics. Oprah talked to Cody in 2009 when he was 6. These are my running legs, and I run very fast in them, and I bounce in them. Cody told Oprah all these wonderful things and said, since I have different legs, I can do anything. And the kid has those kind of those spring legs that you saw in, like, there was
Olympic runner, uh-huh.
Yeah. And so, I mean, nothing was going to keep that kid from doing what he wanted to do. So that's another inspirational eyes on the prize thing. He just wouldn't have anything to do with this. Right from day one when he was a kid.
You know what amazes me? Life is so tough when you're healthy and you've got all your limbs and everything else.
Yeah.
And you lose something like this. And look at how focused he was.
Yeah, I know.
And how he managed to do the impossible. So you can imagine when we have all of our everything, you know, good eyes, good legs, good arms, And we find it difficult.
I'm guessing his parents were pretty darn good,
I think
too.
So, too.
I wish there was more about that.
So I have a personal eyes on the prize.
Okay, sure.
It was, it's an acting story. My background goes back to theater,
right,
as yours does, too.
Yeah.
And I remember when I first finished school in England, you come out of college and you figure, you know, I'm going to get an acting job right away because all your teachers tell you how great you were. And so I left England, came back to Canada, and started trying getting an acting. And I kept going on audition after audition after audition after audition, and I still didn't get anything. It was really tough. The hardest thing was I was working as in a restaurant. It was called Marcolangelo's, and they did
Marcolangelo's,
and they I don't know why that came to me, and they made these fancy hamburgers back then. This was in Toronto, and I was a hostess, and then I also helped, you know, bus tables and stuff. And I remember a whole group of my friends coming in, all had jobs in the theater, or like Mimi, she had a TV show.
Oh, your friend Mimi.
Yeah, and they all came in while I was and laughing and talking about, oh, I did this rehearsal and
God.
I did this rehearsal and this was all going good. They all came in together, and I remember seating them at their table and thinking, oh, my God, they've got everything and I've got nothing. I remember them leaving. I remember them cleaning up after them. You know, they kind of left a mess.
No.
And thinking, what am I doing? I thought I was so good. My teachers told I was so good. I've been on all these auditions. I should just give up. I'm no good. I'm not pretty enough. I'm not smart enough, whatever. So I'm telling you, this is the honest God truth. A week later, I went on audition and I got it. And it was to do a play. Mm-hmm. And it was in Toronto. And I got great, great reviews. And in my theater life, and from that point on, I never looked back.
No, you didn't, because that's how I met you.
Exactly. But it came this close, Mike. I almost thought,
almost
what? I'm going to give up, because I was offered a job to be, to go into training to be a pharmacist. And so I could have gone back to where my parents lived, given it all up in Toronto, and been a pharmacist.
Which have been a very good one.
I think so. Maybe now.
Now, looking back.
Exactly. But you had to keep, as an actor, if you don't keep your eyes on the prize, you're done for, because everybody tells you you're too short, you're too fat, you're too thin, you're too old, you're too young. Nothing is right. And so you really have to have a strong constitution.
That's absolutely correct. I know the feeling. Trust me. Okay, my story, my personal story. We were already married when this happened, but we were doing quite well in advertising at the time. I guess this was, 1998, right?
Correct.
Yes, 1998. And I thought, well, our car was falling apart, so let's get a new car. And I set my sights on a Mercedes-Benz. Funny how that came around again from... Anyway, yeah, Mercedes-Benz. And I don't know what it was. I very seldom in my life have become so infatuated with an idea. But it wasn't going to be easy. And this is the way I rationalized it, is that we both talked about this at length and said, okay, this is an expensive vehicle. This is the most expensive vehicle I've ever owned, period. Now, why is this worth it? And after the research, we thought, look, you know what? If you buy one of these, it's going to last three times longer than anything else you're going to get. Really. And surely enough, we've got the car, finally. It was a great, wonderful day. We had that thing for 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
And if it hadn't got rear-ended, I think we'd still have it.
She was texting.
Yeah, she was texting.
A young kid texting,
put your
phone down.
But anyway, that was my prize. And I remember you said, God, I've never seen you so focused before. But we got that beautiful silver E320 Mercedes-Benz and loved it, loved it, loved it.
And ran it to the end.
Ran it to the dirt. That's the way to do it.
So keep your eyes on the prize.
Right.
It's not easy. Don't listen to the outside chatter and just... follow your heart.
Absolutely. Good luck out there. Time off, Jen.
Time off. I'm reading a great, great book.
Oh, I know. You've been raving about it.
I love it. It's called The Bedlam Detective by Stephen Gallagher. And it takes place in London in 1912.
Okay.
And it's all about this hospital that got the nickname called Bedlam. It was an insane asylum. And actually, I've got some paperwork on it.
Yeah, I know. It's looked it up in Wikipedia.
I sure did. It's now called, and has been called for some time, the Bethlehem Royal Hospital, known as St. Mary Bethlehem in London, and it's still there. And the front of it, the original building, there's a portion of it that's a little museum that I was reading here.
Oh, okay.
But it still is a hospital. And this hospital, it started as a foundation in 1247.
12?
Yeah.
47.
It's one of the oldest hospitals, and then it sort of flipped into becoming a hospital. And it's one of the oldest hospitals in the world, and they filmed a lot of TV series in there. Boris Karloff's Bedlam. It was a 1946 film called Bedlam.
Good evening.
Exactly. And so anyways, long story short, it's all about a detective around this hospital in 1912. And it's really interesting. It's really dark. And I know one person out there, Michael Bosick, if you're listening, you'll probably want to read this.
Yeah.
It's very, very interesting. And then go check out this old hospital. There's unbelievable photographs throughout the time.
We've got to find it on like Google Earth. I want to see that on a street view.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah,
So I'd like to know where in London it is. You know, that from that long ago, it's got to be definitely central London. But anyway, we'll look it up.
Yeah, it's really interesting. The book is great if you like that kind of stuff.
Yeah, okay. All right. Remember when? Now, here's something that I had no knowledge about. Now, I thought this was a referral to. This came from a friend of ours, Lorraine Wigston, right?
Mm-hmm.
Lorraine's been on the show, right?
Yes.
Okay, she has. Wonderful person. Love her. Love her. She and her husband. Anyway, I thought you were talking about an Etch-a-Sketch. What was she talking about?
This was called a magic slate, and they called it in the advertising the magic slate, the paper saver. It was a cheaper kind of version of the Etch-a-Sketch, if you like, in a way. And it was like a thin cardboard back, and there had this thing that flapped over, and it had like not a pen, but like a stylus. I guess you would call it.
Yeah, sure.
And you'd write stuff on there, and you could read it. And then you just flip the little plastic paper over and it would clear it off. And you could flip it back and write it again. And it was an inexpensive Etch-a-Sketch is what I call it, you know. And I loved it. And I remembered when we were talking about it this morning,
uh-huh,
is that when we went out trick-or-treating, because we just had our Halloween.
Yes, we did.
There was this rich lady down the street who, instead of giving out candy, was giving out magic slates.
Get out of here.
Nope, I'm not kidding
you. I bet everybody went to that
house.
Now,
maybe she worked for the company that made magic slate or whatever.
Wow.
But it wasn't the original size of the magic slate. It was like a little tiny smaller version of
like
one.
Oh, like a sample size.
It could have been samples, and we went mad. We went crazy.
Oh,
so,
boy.
So do you remember out there, if you remember, the magic slate?
That is so cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you, Lorraine.
Thank you.
Appreciate that.
Yes.
Now share the show.
Oh, she does.
She does. I know. She's always so kind. Same with my friend Esther McCulloch. They're like right on it right now. I can't even publish the thing fast enough before they do it. That's so sweet.
We thank you for that.
Okay, I have a quote.
All right.
Now, these, of course, got to circle back to Eyes on the Prize, of course, right? Someone you haven't even met yet is wondering what it would be like to know someone like you.
Wow.
Ooh.
I like that.
I hope it's true.
So, say it again.
Okay. Someone you haven't even met yet is wondering what it would be like to know someone like you.
Yeah. So, you're special out there. You truly are.
You're special. Eyes on the Prize, a friendship is better than anything.
So, I'm going to wrap the show up.
All right.
Ask yourself if what you are doing today is getting you closer to where you want to be tomorrow. Keep your eyes on the prize. And thanks for listening, because remember, we weren't born yesterday.